His chosen comrades thought at school he must grow a famous man. He thought the same and lived by rule, all his 20s crammed with toil. What then? Sang Plato's ghost. What then? Everything he wrote was read. After certain years he won sufficient money for his need. Friends that have been friends indeed. What then? Sang Plato's ghost. What then? All his happier dreams came true. A small old house, wife, daughter, son. Grounds where plum and cabbage grew. Poets and wits about him drew. What then? Sang Plato's ghost. What then? The work is done, grown old, he thought. According to my boyish plan, let the fools rage. I swerved in naught, something to perfection brought. But louder sang that ghost. What then? My sister warned me about what older workers might do during my first week in the factory. The usual rites of initiation. But nothing too serious. I wasn't what men termed a lifer. A factory hand destined to spend his life moving between factories with identical prospects. So while men might have some fun by sending me in search of a long wait or a glass hammer, I was really a civilian in the territorial wars where conveyor belt crews competed to earn the most bonus money. My job was temporary, arranged by my sister, a secretary in the offices, to ensure that, aged 15, I'd spend my summer holidays at the cable factory, drawing a wage instead of stuck at home, in a house where my late mother's absence lay everywhere. I was shy, so it was good that Jack McCann, the man I was meant to help, wasn't prone to unnecessary chat. We produced heavy-duty electrical cable that was wound onto huge wooden spools. McCann's job was to seal in each spool by hammering wooden slats around them. It took me so long to drive home 1 6-inch nail that McCann devised a routine where I simply handed him slats before helping him roll the sealed spools outside for loading onto trucks. Mostly we worked in companionable silence, McCann benignly tolerating my incompetence in this adult world. One day our silence became so long that I confessed to dreaming of becoming a writer. Accepting this revelation with a stoic nod, McCann so focused on hammering nails that I presumed my words hadn't registered. Then, after slotting home a last nail, he looked up. I've never met a writer before. I never said I was a writer, I said. I just enjoy writing bits of poems, but I don't know if they're any good. He shrugged. Time will tell. Sorts out most things. Nobody has a clue what they'll become at 15. I thought I'd be a priest. What happened? McCann pressed his shoulder against the spool, which we began to roll out into the yard. I got distracted by fast women and slow horses. Besides, the small print was in Latin. I've never met a poet, I said, as we parked the spool outside. Then you've 2 weeks left to meet a man who met one. Go down and talk to Charlie. Well, who's Charlie? Charlie has so much knowledge stored inside his head, it's like a galaxy. Do you know the copper storage bays? Charlie's office is at the end.
He has an office.
McCann laughed. Some lads call it the machine gun post. It's so well fortified.
And what does he do?
He's meant to check defective cables, but he's just marking time. When he turns 65 next month, they turf him out. He buried his missus some years back. Has a daughter in Australia, but I can't see Charlie boarding a plane. He gets lonely, so say hello. Then at least you'll have talked to a man who once talked to W.B. Yeats. Walking back inside, I hoped that McCann was winding me up. I wouldn't know what to say to an old man. If I was to get a sense of Yeats, I'd always imagined it being on a lake isle in Sligo, not in a bustling factory. But McCann urged me to walk on past stacked boxes to where an old man with round glasses sat on a stool, methodically inspecting tangled cables. He looked up. If they sent you for a long wait, play along,
There's tea in the flask. Jack McCann sent me. The old man scrutinised me.
Does Jack want something?
He asked me to ask you if you'd ever met Yeats. I told him I write poems. The man nodded.
Poems are old friends. You understand them differently as you get older.
He closed his eyes and recited a poem. In this factory, it felt like a glimpse into another world.
That's Yeats,
he said after he finished. Do the men think you odd, reciting poems? He shrugged.
I've never asked them.
Did you really know Yeats?
Charlie shook his head. I didn't know him, but I met him. I was 13, a messenger boy on a bicycle heavier than myself. The first time I saw him on the streets, I thought he was a stray in the head. Big shock of white hair thrown skyward, hands flailing as he walked, muttering aloud. I asked a policeman had this Egypt just escaped from an asylum, and the copper told me it was no Egypt. It was Willie Yeats, a great man for the old poems.
Charlie put down the cable.
Some months later, my boss dispatched me with a massive parcel out to a house called Riversdale in Rathfarnham. Who opens the door? Only the old fellow with the white hair. So distracted looking that he barely saw me until I said, I believe you're a great man for the old poems. Yeats took a step back and asked me who had told me this. I told him it was a copper and you don't argue with coppers. This made him laugh. He looked at me and then at the size of my bike and asked if I ever fell off.
The old man seemed lost in memory, staring across the factory.
I told Yeats how my boss said that I'd grow into the saddle and asked him what it was to write poems, because I'd never met a writer, although I'd already met every other class of blackguard by then. He asked me if I'd read any of his poems and I said no, but that I'd done the first act of Julius Caesar in school and could still recite every word. I saw Yeats glance back into his hallway like a million tasks awaited him. And then he asked if I was thirsty. I said I'd murder a glass of water, but it was a poor choice of words. Yeats shook his head and said we'd had too much murder in Ireland. But if I could recite the opening of Julius Caesar, we'd find me lemonade and maybe even his wife's biscuits.
He asked you in? I asked Charlie. The old man nodded.
He took a shine or felt sorry for me. He stood me on a chair in his study and listened as I gave Caesar, Brutus and Cassius accents, like they hailed from different parts of Dublin. He laughed, but not at me. He laughed because he was happy. He was 73, but you'd swear we were two kids mitching from school.
What was he like? I asked.
Charlie shrugged. He was himself. His desk was littered with paper, drafts of a poem he couldn't get right. Lines repeated and crossed out, but always the same title. What then?
Charlie closed his eyes, his voice reflective.
What then? Sang Plato's ghost. What then?
Charlie looked up.
Isn't it funny Yeats had written so much, yet still didn't know if it was enough? His voyage wasn't over. There'd always be one last poem to write. He'd never face what I'm facing. Poets don't retire. Yeats saw me glance at the unfinished poem and his manner changed. He read some lines aloud and suddenly asked me what I made of it.
Yeats asked your opinion, I said. Charlie nodded.
I think he was really asking himself. Not just what he thought of that poem, but of all he'd done. I was so inconsequential that he could think aloud through me. But I truly saw him in that moment. Not the public figure, but a private man. Still convinced he hadn't done enough. I remember the reams of unfinished poems littering his desk and often wonder, why did he bother inviting in a messenger boy?
Charlie studied me from behind the glasses held together with sellotape.
I don't know,
I replied.
Me neither. But maybe for once he enjoyed not being treated as a genius. Well, I didn't want his endorsement. I wanted a glass of water, and I was more thrilled to get lemonade than if he gave me his collected works. To me, he was just an old geezer who wrote poems. He recited the lines again, and I sensed his insecurity. He didn't know if they were sufficient to justify his life. I was just a slum kid. Yet he looked at me like I was his judge and jury,
like his ancestors had sent me as a test. because if his poem didn't move me, maybe his life's work was in vain. I write poems, I said, but I haven't the courage to show anyone. Don't know if they're good enough. Wouldn't want folk laughing at me.
Ah, that's the risk.
Charlie untangled a cable. I once stood in a dance hall in Camden Street, trying to find the courage to ask a beautiful girl to dance, convinced she'd say no in front of everyone. Turned out she'd been watching me all evening. 40 years we were together, and I still think she watches over me at times. Though more often I feel what I think Yeats felt the day he invited me in. What's that? I asked.
What all old men feel. Loneliness. This factory is a dump, but sometimes men find time to chat, or Jack McCann sends a lad down to talk to me, because even here I get lonely. But nothing compared to the loneliness at home. Yeats had a wife and children, but they were out, and loneliness can ambush an old man. The loneliness of knowing that illness and death lies ahead. What you've done in the past means nothing. You start every day plagued by the same questions. What then? What comes at the end of all of this?
Charlie examined the cable.
Cycling back from Rathfarnham that day, I could never imagine ever being 65.
He looked up.
I retire soon, but if you decide to read me your poems before then, you'll be only the second poet to do so. Give writing a go. There's nothing worse than regrets.
Have you regrets?
I wish I told my wife more often that I loved her. Maybe I'll get my chance in the next life. I don't know. I don't have a clue what comes next.
I don't know if my poems are any good, I said.
If you're never satisfied with what you've written, then you sound like the only other poet I met, Charlie said. I'm here till July 3rd, if you need your first audience.
I nodded and walked back towards McCann. I felt different. More grown up. I had met a man who met Yeats. He took me seriously, like Yeats took him seriously as a child.
Didn't know what would happen to Charlie after he retired, nor had I a clue about what would happen to me in later years. But I felt ready to embrace the future, suddenly aware that no matter what hand fate dealt me, it would never be enough to quench my doubts.
I'd always be plagued by a yearning to know more. This unease would remain just as intense if I ever reached the age that Yeats was on the day he indulged a messenger boy with lemonade. Famous, yet still plagued by uncertainty. Still striving to make sense of what then. What comes next?